there were those who just wanted to come up and touch us, you know, because we were her relatives, and they said, you had the same blood that she had. I was having an out-of-body experience. I was mind-boggled. Not only did I feel like a celebrity, but I just couldn't imagine that she had inspired and touched so many people's lives.
This is Four People with Bishop Rob Wright.
Hello, everyone. This is Bishop Rob Wright, and this is Four People, a podcast of the Diocese of Atlanta. We have a very rare treat today. We are on with Ms. Rosita Stevens Halsey, who in her own right is a very distinguished and has a very wonderful and diverse career. But of late, she has committed herself to helping us all know more about her aunt, the Reverend Polly Murray. Rosita, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
We are delighted that you are here. We are family. Obviously, Polly Murray was an Episcopal priest, and so we are talking about one of our own, one of our most distinguished Americans. We'll get into that in just a little bit. And you have written a book called Polly Murray, The Life of a Pioneering Feminist and Civil Rights Activist. So, Rosita, start off by telling us a little bit about yourself, and then why this book?
Well, all of my life, I wanted to be an educator. And after college, my first position was as a teacher in Rockland County, New York. I moved from there to IBM as a systems engineer. And after a few years, I went to Europe on vacation and stayed 10 years. So while I was there, I was able to use my education to teach military dependents in Heidelberg, Germany. And after 10 years, I came back home and opened up a consulting firm in Atlanta, Georgia, and spent 10 wonderful years there before coming back home to Washington, D.C., to help take care of my mother. So I've had an interest in traveling all of my life, and a love for meeting people of many different cultures, which I think sort of blends into some of Aunt Polly's philosophy about people of the world and us all being one world and equal human beings. I really didn't know. I ended actually my professional experience as a teacher about a year ago. And I had been thinking for several years about how could I contribute to Polly Murray's legacy. And I really think that God directed me to do this. I have a niece named Rhea, who lives in Atlanta, Georgia. And she had gone to Durham to find out what was going on with reference to the Polly Murray Project. As a family member, family members would ask us, have you heard that there's something going on about Aunt Polly in Durham? And really we hadn't. No one had officially contacted at least me and the relatives I talked to, and but we knew that there was something exciting or going on, and so Rhea and I decided to go to Durham and find out what it was. And there I had what I call my Polly Murray epiphany. Mark Twain once said, the two most important days in your life are the day you're born and the day you find out why. And as an educator, I was nearing the end of my career, and I didn't really know what I was going to do besides rest and not have to go to work. And so I had never planned to go to Durham. I had never been to our maternal ancestral home. And we went there to explore. And the very day that we arrived in Durham happened to be the feast day at St. Titus Episcopal Church. And we it was suggested to us that we go there and participate. And I had never been to a feast day. And though I was aware that she had been designated a saint in the Episcopal Church, I had never been a part of a celebration. So when we arrived, there was so much pomp and circumstance about who she was, and the everybody who was in the church was there to celebrate her. And I found out that this church actually was, some founding members were the two aunts, Aunt Sally and Aunt Pauline, that she had lived with in Durham. And so it was quite exciting. When the services were over, they mentioned that there was always an ice cream social. So everyone was invited to get ice cream.
Always a good thing.
And then they said, you know, for about 30 minutes or so, you can just mingle and talk. And so I was eating my ice cream, and I turned around and I saw this long line of people in this, you know, small church. And I looked over and I wondered what was going on. And my niece said, I think they're in line to talk to us. And so we turned around, and everybody in that line wanted to talk to us. If they had ever met her, they wanted to share a tidbit about how she had, you know, impacted on them, or what the occasion had been. If they had never met her and had just learned about her through a book or something, they wanted to share how they had been inspired by maybe a poem or something that she had written. And there were those who just wanted to come up and touch us, you know, because we were her relatives, and they said, you have the same blood that she had. I was having an out-of-body experience. I was mind-boggled. Not only did I feel like a celebrity, but I just couldn't imagine that she had inspired and touched so many people's lives. And so here, an hour and a half later, we're still standing there with the church not being able to close because everyone wanted to talk to us. And as we left, I said to my niece, I said, you know, we need to get involved. Look at all of these people who know about her and seem to love her and are working as volunteers to uplift her legacy. And as family members, it's not only our responsibility to try to do that, but also, you know, it would be quite an honor. And so at that point, I decided that we needed to do something formally.
Well, let me interrupt you right there. And just for people who don't know, we're talking about Pauli Murray here. And if you just do a quick search on Pauli Murray, you immediately wonder why you didn't know more about her. I mean, this is a woman who influenced Eleanor Roosevelt, Eleanor Holmes Norton, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Marion Wright Edelman, someone I know and very dear to me, Patricia Hills Collin. This is a woman, Pauli Murray, who influenced and indeed developed the legal strategy that Thurgood Marshall and others used to break the back of Jim Crow, and we should also say Jane Crow. So we're talking about a significant intellect, as well as a person of significant faith, educated at Hunter College in New York. Hunter College in New York. Howard University, my own alma mater, University of California at Berkeley, Yale, and the General Theological Seminary. We are talking about someone who was a strong tree in the middle of a forest of lesser trees, who really is a significant American, and we need to know more about her. I guess what I want to know is that, so you've given us that wonderful background, and there's starting to be a swell of people who want to know her. The Episcopal Church has given her a feast day, which is July 1st, which is the day of her death. She died in 1985 in my hometown in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. But, you know, why do you think we need to pay more attention, you know, beyond your personal recollections and the familial connection? Why do you think America, given all that we are right now, the good and the bad, why do we need to pay attention to Pauli Murray?
Though very humble, and though she never worked for fame and fortune, she did make quite an impact on this country, though most people don't know that.
Yeah.
You mentioned Brown versus the Board of Education. And I think even now we could use her again. But we were going through so many things at that time that colored people or Negroes or Black people, depending on who was talking, had not been able to progress. One of the reasons that she and Mrs. Roosevelt became friends was because she was advocating with President Roosevelt to make changes in this country at a time when Black people, especially in the South, were being lynched anywhere and everywhere for any reason.
Yes.
And getting no justice from the court system or the police, you know, no support.
Yes.
For just normal average citizens, mentioning Brown versus the Board of Education. Here we had a system that was supposed to be separate but equal, which never could be separate but equal. And this had gone on for years and years. And legally, people could not find, seem to come up with a way to change that. What Thurgood Marshall and the NAACP and others in the civil rights field did was they were going case by case.
Right.
If something happened at a hospital where a Black person was not admitted and perhaps that Black person died, they just sued that hospital. There was no coast-to-coast solutions for what was going on in the United States at that time. So the very fact that they were able to overturn that, change that, and desegregate the schools was monumental. Of course, a lot of people were not pleased at the time, and that's how Jim Crow developed, that especially in the South, government organizations and politicians came up with ways to try to usurp, you know, that Supreme Court win.
Yes.
She was someone who believed that all humans were important, all humans were equal. And so when you mentioned Jane Crow,
yeah,
she fought for the fact that you had to include what someone's gender was when you were talking about human rights, because women didn't have the rights that men had, even though we were normally focused on Black people not having the rights of white people. And so she worked on that as well. And even though during her lifetime there was not really a label of the LGBT plus community, the things in, that she worked for, the positions that she wrote, the things that she demanded, protected people regardless of their gender identification or, you know, whom they loved. And so she was really a very pivotal person. But many women had to take a back seat as well. So when, even with Martin Luther King and the NAACP, there were women behind the scenes who were working just as hard as the men.
But if they, not harder, right.
Yes, but they often didn't get the, you know, the same positions. They weren't out front. They weren't standing on the stage or walking in the front, you know, during peace marches and things of that nature. And then it's varied. If you read her writings, you see how brilliant she was as an author, as a poet, but very few people knew about her legal mind. She's really a legal scholar and one of the people who really started an interest in Aunt Polly was Ruth Bader Ginsburg, because she always credited Aunt Polly with her legal theories and considered her a legal scholar. And as you know, put her name on some of her briefs because she had learned those theories through knowing her or reading about her.
Well, what was amazing to me, you know, before we started recording, you said something that I hadn't known, which was it was her theory that the guys, Thurgood Marshall, Charles Hamilton Houston, and others used to break the back, ultimately, of segregation in education, what we call the Brown versus Board of Education case. But it was not recognized until 10 years later. She did not know and was not told that they had actually used her work to actually get that done. Can you say a little bit about that? Because that just blew my mind.
Well, and a lot of people probably at Howard don't know this. When Aunt Polly went to Howard in 41, there was one other woman in that class, but she didn't last very long.
Yes.
So Aunt Polly became the only female in her class during the 3 years that she was there. And she was really basically ignored by the male students and didn't really get the props she should have gotten from the professors, even though she had been invited to come there and had been offered and received a scholarship. But they would always say, well, you know, what are you going to do with a law degree? You're not going to be able to practice as a lawyer. There were, you know, few women working in big law firms at that time in the 40s. So this is where she really realized, though she had gone there thinking, I'm going to be surrounded by my people and I won't have to feel, you know, Jim Crow and feel discriminated against. But she actually was as a female. And in law school at Howard, there was a judge of the Court of Peers, and they used that, I guess, for their mock courts and, you know, to practice how to be lawyers and what have you. So the top student in the junior class was always the judge. So when the scores went up and she, through her testing and what have you, was the top student in the entire class, they refused to sit her as the judge. And they just didn't have a court of peers that year.
Yeah.
And then in the senior year, and in that junior year, she also had talked about Plessy versus Ferguson.
Right.
And had expounded on her theory about how she thought that could be solved. And they laughed at her. And what I found out in research, which I didn't know, was that what the professors would do in class is they would give a problem or a scenario, and then they would go around and ask all the male students, what did they think? And if no one got it right, then they would say to Pauly, well, I guess through process of elimination, you probably know the answer now. What do you say?
Yeah.
And most of the time she had the correct answer, not by process of elimination, but because one thing you will learn if you ever read about her is if you told her she could not accomplish something, that was the inspiration for her determination to show you, oh, yes, I can.
Well, her famous quote fits right in here, doesn't it? Don't get mad, get smart.
Right.
Right?
And so that's what she did. And then the second year, which was the last year, her senior year, when she was a top student in the class, she was allowed to be the judge, and they went on through the process,
yes,
even though they didn't, really like it. And but so it was almost by default, that her brilliance was noticed, but she really didn't get any prompts for that. And then as a child and growing up, she knew because of the color of her skin, there were issues, and she knew she wasn't allowed to do things because she was colored or a Negro.
Yeah. But
then when she becomes the top person in the class and gets a Rosenwald fellowship to get her master's, traditionally the top student at Howard was automatically admitted to Harvard to get a master's. Then she hit a brick wall because Harvard wouldn't accept her because of her gender. So, that just reinforced it's either I'm not a male or I'm not, I'm Black. And so that's how she was always or often marginalized because of her race or her gender.
Hi, listeners. Thank you for listening to Four People, a space of digital evangelism. You can keep up with us on Instagram and Facebook at Bishop Rob Wright. And now back to Four People.
Rosita, let's shift gears here just a second, because you've painted a wonderful picture and given us just a peek at, a legal genius, a brilliant scholar, an influential figure, people who had the good sense to look back or to look to their left or right, like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, immediately recognized the genius. Let's shift gears here and talk a little bit about what you know of her faith life. She in some ways takes a left turn herself, and ends up in seminary, a general theological seminary in New York City, in Chelsea, and then becomes among the first women to be ordained in the Episcopal Church in 1977. Do you have any sense of her faith journey, the contours of her faith journey that brought her to the ordained ministry?
Well, I'm so often asked, when did Pauly Murray become an Episcopalian?
Yeah.
Or how could she have ended up an Episcopal priest? Well, she was born an Episcopalian.
Yeah.
The whole family traditionally was Episcopalian. And even back to the white slave owners, she, her grandmother, Cornelia, had gone to Chapel of the Cross in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, all her life. Of course, having to sit in the balcony as a Black person, but with her slave owner aunt, Mary Ruffin Smith. So Aunt Pauly had a very serious religious upbringing, And also had been told when she was a child by an Episcopal priest that she was a child of destiny, which she often thought of throughout her life, and I think it gave her strength. I didn't know, and many people did not know, that and Aunt Polly couldn't allow the public to know, that she had two loves of her life, both of whom were women.
Yes.
And during the time of her life, she could not add to the fact that she was Black and that she, had a gender issue and a racial issue in terms of society. So she could not talk about it, nor did she understand fully her feelings about being attracted to women. And she had a long-term relationship with the love of her life, whom she called Rennie, who died. And when she died, it really so deeply troubled Aunt Polly. I think she not only was angry, but she was bewildered. And she decided at that time that she would formally give her life to God and pursue that area of her interest. So she had always been very spiritual,
yeah,
and very religious. And in typical fashion, when she decided to do it and went through seminary, she knew that women could not be priests. And there was no way Polly Murray was going to be some insignificant layperson in a church. Can you imagine with
right.
a doctorate from Yale
right.
in law and all of her other degrees and experiences? So as soon and even before she finished, she joined others in the church who had been working quietly and not so quietly on raising the positions of women in the Episcopal Church. And so she was in that group that, you know, were formally complaining and doing what they thought was necessary to get that change. So when the church did decide to admit women, she was in, I think, 11 women who
yes.
were ordained. And being the only African-American female, she became the first African-American female priest. And I think her law background and her labor background and all of the things she had done in helping people, her interest in sociology and human rights, all played a wonderful core part of her becoming a priest and also made her unique as well.
Well, there is a wonderful, for those who are listening, there is a wonderful documentary. I believe it's on Amazon Prime. Is that right?
Yes.
About Polly Murray. I'm telling you, it is just it's phenomenally well done. It takes you down some of these roads that we've been down, on the podcast, but with much more detail, with all these wonderful photographs, you really get a sense of the spirit and the intellect of this woman, and how far ahead of her times she actually was in terms of thinking about equity and inclusion and justice. I like one of her quotes I saw there, which is one person and a typewriter constitutes a movement, right? I mean, it is these formidable women like Polly, like Ella Baker, later Marion Wright Edelman. Of course, Coretta Scott King never got the credit that she deserved as not just sort of the arm, you know, someone on the arm of Dr. King, but actually a co-strategist. About this movement that we call civil rights, which was much, much more than that. And of course, your book, we want to make sure we point that out. It's Polly Murray, The Life of a Pioneering Feminist and Civil Rights Activist. In the couple minutes that we have left, Rosita, I wonder personally how Polly influenced you, and perhaps even now is influencing you as you live out your calling to be a great steward of her legacy.
Well, I definitely got from her my strong will and determination and perseverance and ability to never give up. I also think that she influenced me by showing me that it's important to work for humanity and for my community, as opposed to some of the things that young people seem to feel are important and what have you. And I, as I spent about a year researching her, I was just so inspired by her fierceness, her brilliance, her determination, and the fact that she never gave up no matter what was thrown at her. I can't imagine a life like hers when there were so many things that she couldn't grasp.
Sure.
You know, to come out of college after spending 4 years living meagerly, not eating a lot, you know, because she had to spend her money on where she lived and buying her books, and then coming out in the Great Depression and not being able to find a job and being really so overeducated and very seldom having professional opportunities to really show the brilliance and the experience and the education that she had. She inspired me to join several groups when I was in junior high school to work toward helping others. I was in the junior Red Cross, and in college I worked for the student union, and also often would go to other communities where Black people hadn't had a lot of opportunities and do speeches about how there would be opportunities for them if they just worked hard, got an education, or got good skills, and not to give up because of what society was saying about them or that the brick walls that, you know, they hit during their upbringing. So I was very much like her, as opposed to my own mother. And Aunt Polly was very different from her other, her five siblings.
Yes.
And I think we're lucky that she made the decision at 3 years old to move to Durham with her Aunt Pauline, because there she had a very different life than the upper class life that my mother and the other siblings had. And so it gave her a perspective that really made her important to humanity.
Rosita, when I think about, as we wrap up now, as I think about all that you've said and the little I know and have read myself about Polly, you know, the Bible verse that comes to mind is from St. Paul in Galatians 6:9. Let us not become weary in doing good, because at a proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. And we would not be having this conversation if she had given up. The legal strategy that became the tip of the spear for Brown versus Board of Education would not be with us if she had given up. And so many other, we could just go down the line. So she did not give up. And of course, this last bit, she said that hope is a song in a weary throat. And when I think about people like Pauly and so many people that we are indebted to, I think about, my gosh, they found just a kernel of hope that kept them going and have left us a legacy that we are still talking about. Rosita, I want to thank you for taking time. We're honored to have you. Thank you for your scholarship. Thank you for being a good steward of your aunt's legacy. Again, the book is Pauly Murray, The Life of a Pioneering Feminist and Civil Rights Activist. Rosita, thank you.
You're quite welcome. And thanks for having me.
Absolutely. God bless you.